The Mysterious Old Radio Listening Society Podcast.
Welcome to the Mysterious Old Radio Listening Society, a podcast dedicated to suspense, crime, and horror stories from the golden age of radio. I'm Eric.
I'm Tim.
And I'm Joshua.
We love mysterious old-time radio stories, but do they stand the test of time? That's what we're here to find out.
Today, we present an episode of my choosing, The Judas Clock from Inner Sanctum Mystery, starring series regulars Barry Kroger and Santos Ortega.
Inner Sanctum Mystery was created by Hyman Brown, one of the great storytellers of the Golden Age of Radio. Brown's career spanned 8 decades and a diverse range of genres, from his adaptation of comic strip hero Dick Tracy to his 1970s revival of the radio drama The CBS Radio Mystery Theater.
Inner Sanctum ran on NBC from January 1941 to October 1952 and featured one of horror radio's most iconic hosts, Raymond Edward Johnson, known simply as Raymond. His ghoulish jokes and horrendous puns were a technique borrowed from the genre of French theater known as Grand Guignol, which famously blended horror and comedy to create a shocking hot and cold shower effect.
In 1945, Raymond left the series, replaced by Broadway actor Paul McGrath, known simply as Mr. Host. McGrath carried on the tradition of painful puns, briefly teaming up with Lipton Tea spokeswoman Mary Bennett to create one of old-time radio's strangest comedy duos.
So now let's listen to The Judas Clock from Inner Sanctum Mystery, first broadcast April 17th, 1945.
It's late at night, and a chill has set in. You're alone, and the only light you see is coming from an antique radio. Listen to the sounds coming from the speaker. Listen to the music, and listen to the voices.
Lipton Tea and Lipton Soup present Inner Sanctum Mysteries. Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum. This is Raymond, your host at the squeaking door. Come in, won't you? Well, you're shivering. Cold? Oh. Well, don't let it throw you. Just remember that many are cold, but few are frozen. Well, our story, to be different tonight, is about murder. Murder and a clock. So, if you've got a little time to kill, let's do it now, huh?
Why, Mr. Raymond, nobody can really kill time.
Well, maybe not, but you certainly can frighten it. Didn't you ever hear of an alarmed clock?
Mr. Raymond, someday you're going to choke on one of those puns.
And won't that be nice, Mary? Then you can revive me with guess what, Lipton Tea.
Oh, dear, must this go on week after week? Why must I talk to the only person in the world who doesn't know the proper uses of Lipton Tea?
Oh, don't say that.
It isn't used to revive people, at least not in the way you mean it. Of course, lots of folks do find that Lipton's makes the day seem brighter. Yes, it sort of helps them through their housework to sit down now and then between meals, as well as at dinner and supper, and enjoy a cup of Lipton Tea. And the reason why Lipton's is so satisfying is because of that one little word, brisk. B-R-I-S-K. Tea experts say that Lipton's has a brisk flavor, which means that it always tastes tangy and bracing. It's never flat or wishy-washy. So folks ask for Lipton Tea at your grocer's. You just don't know how good tea can be till you've tried Lipton's.
Yes, and when you leave the grocer, step next door to the clockmaker's shop and ask him for the Judas clock. If he doesn't have it on hand, just ask him to give you the works. Yes, the title of tonight's story is The Judas Clock. It's an original radio play by that old clock watcher, Christopher Mayo. Our star is Barry Kroger, who plays the role of Sebastian Packer.
I am a clockmaker. I carry on the profession my father taught me in London. I like clocks. all that is but one. For 30 years, I've looked for a certain clock and a certain man. The clock is known to collectors as the Judas clock. The man I swore to kill when, as a boy of 14, I closed my father's glazing eyes and wiped the froth of blood from his lips. Last night, I found the Judas clock. Tonight, I may have found the man.
I'm told you're an expert clock repairman, Mr.
Packer, madam. Well, yes, I suppose I am.
Well, I have a clock. Rather, my husband has, and it hasn't run for years. Would you have a look at it?
Well, can't you bring it in?
Oh, heavens no, it weighs 500 pounds. Oh. One of those huge marble things. Italian Renaissance, I'd say.
Marble? Italian? Well, can you describe it further?
Well, it's rather unusual. Black marble. Heavily carved with biblical characters. The ivory face has a beautifully etched scene on it. But it's a gruesome one.
Gruesome? What kind of a scene?
It's a picture of a man hanging from a tree.
Judas!
His face is positively ghastly.
The Judas clock. I knew without seeing it why the clock wouldn't run. It had been built in Italy for a prince of the House of Savoy in 1598. He conceived the idea when he discovered that his family's treasures included the 30 pieces of silver of Judas Iscariot. The clock was made to run only when the 30 silver coins of Judas were in place in the clock's hollow weights. 15 in each weight. And the coins had been in my possession since the day of my father's death. Somewhere inside me, that clock still beats its deep-throated song, and I have but to close my eyes to hear again my father's voice.
It's an evil clock, son. As evil as Satan himself. And it's cursed. There is a legend that every man who has owned it has died a violent and bloody death.
Well, Mr. Packer, can you fix it?
Oh, I'm sorry. I was daydreaming. Well, yes, does Mr.
Arnold.
Arnold. Does Mr. Arnold know that you're having the clock repaired?
No. We've only been married a few weeks, and I'd like to have it working when he comes back to town tomorrow. Sort of a surprise.
Yes, I see. Well, I'll be there in half an hour, Mrs. Arnold. So last night, I went to the Arnold house and found the Judas clock again. I started to work. Foghorns from the East River sounded much as I remembered they did in London. And suddenly, I was back there on a fateful day, about a fortnight after the clock had been uncrated by my father. I was in the shop when the man from Scotland Yard stepped in. He walked straight to the clock and stared at it.
Good afternoon, sir. Does the clock interest you?
Very much. When did you acquire it?
A cousin bought it at an auction in Italy, and I'm displaying it for sale and consignment.
My name's Pettibone, Scotland Yard. He's been looking for this clock for a month. It was stolen in Italy.
Stolen?
Yes, Mr. Packer. And worse, murder was done. Afraid you're involved in a bit of something here.
Murder?
I'm taking possession of the clock in the name of the Crown.
I shall never forget the look of horror on the detective's face a moment later. He laid his hand on the clock's carving, and it froze there, while his face drained white and his eyes bulged. He opened and closed his mouth soundlessly and crumpled to the floor with his hands to his throat. He was still and twisted and very dead. Mr. Pettibone had died of a heart attack the moment he took possession of the clock. I helped Father drag him into the stockroom. Father wanted time to think, so I went to my room. I dozed off only to wake hours later at the sound of angry voices.
Well, Cousin Andrew, you've done me a fine turn, haven't you?
I've told you I didn't mean to kill the old girl. It was an accident. Don't talk so loud. Boy will hear us.
You killed her as soon as you learned she'd made out a will in your favor. Then when you thought it was safe, you sold all her furnishings. And sent the clock to me to sell.
Very well, I did. Jaw in it to the ears.
I'll go to the police.
And how will you explain poor, stiff Mr. Pettibone lying in your stockroom all this while?
I...
Besides, Timothy, There's nothing to fear now. Pettibone's gone. He was the only one who suspected me. Now, you're the only one who knows.
I'll crate this cursed black monster tomorrow, and you leave with it.
And will you also crate Mr. Pettibone?
I
have a plan. Here, sit down in this chair, right here. I'll show you how we can solve the whole thing.
My young heart beat with a wild dread as I listened. I could only see Cousin Andy's back, but I could see Father seated dejectedly in the chair near the Judas clock, his head in his hands. It was midnight. All the clocks in the shop began striking the hour, and louder than all the rest was the chime of the evil clock. If only then I had known, I might have done something, but the slow strokes beat on. 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. And before my horrified eyes, the heavy marble piece leaned slowly from the wall and crashed across my father's back. And Cousin Andy stood facing my father as the clock crushed his frail form and choked him. He made pitiful little sounds, his eyes begging for life. And the murderer just stood, his back to me, and watched.
Thundering sinners, you die hard.
Cousin Andy ran from the shop crying for help. He would claim an accident. I raced into the shop. My father was dead. I choked back my tears, and I closed the poor, staring eyes. I took the coins of Judas from the weights of the clock and ran from the shop, the blood-stained pieces jangling merrily in my pocket. Armed with the notion that the coins were of value, and the definite notion that I must eat, I approached one of the many dingy little curio shops in the Limehouse district. I stepped through the fog toward a shop where a dim light burned in the rear. Every inch of wall and ceiling was hung with curios. Old armor, swords, and shields. I would have run out, but a weazened, apish man barked at me from the rear.
Hey, what you want?
I have something to sell.
What you got?
I have the 30 pieces of silver that belong to Judas Iscariot.
I'll twist this scrawny neck off you. Pulling me leg, eh?
Oh, no, sir, I'm not pulling your leg, sir. Here they are.
Silver, right enough. Where'd you cop them?
Oh, I didn't steal them, sir. They belong to my father.
A likely tale, that.
Will you buy them?
Buy them, he says. Buy them. Get out of here before I cause a bobby, you scamp. Get out!
Oh, no, give me my coins.
Get out or I'll come about and fetch you a sound one.
The ugly brute came toward me. He held my coins clutched in a tight, hairy fist. Before I could move, he had struck me. And I hit the wall with a clatter. And then it happened again. For the second time that night, the curse of the Judas clock struck. As I hit the wall, my eye caught a metallic glint above, and a heavy object dropped from the ceiling. The man was about to strike me again when the object struck his head. And remained part of him. He fell. His skull split in two by a hangman's axe. I clamped my mouth on a cry and pried the man's fist open. The fresh blood made it hard, but I recovered the coins. I stumbled in panic through the shop and out into the night. And the fog of London never swallowed a more frightened and lonely boy.
That nasty fog swallowing a little boy. That reminds me of a little nursery rhyme. Hickory dickory dock, the mouse ran up the clock. The clock struck two. Look out, it might strike you.
Heavens, I'm glad I don't own that terrible clock.
Oh, don't say that, Mary. Just think, if you had the Judas clock, then time wouldn't hang heavily on you. No, it would fall on you.
Well, if it did fall and you rescued me, wouldn't that make you a time saver?
Well, split my sides with an axe if Mary didn't make with a joke.
Well, a very little one, Mr. Raymond.
That's true.
But seriously, I do have something to say about a time saver. And I'm thinking about Lipton tea. You know, Lipton's is such a handy beverage. It takes so little time to prepare, and it's always so welcome. Yes, its famous brisk flavor makes it enjoyable, not just at your own mealtimes, but between meals and whenever folks drop in for a visit. That's why it's a good idea to buy Lipton's in the larger, more economical size packages. That's right. The larger packages are much thriftier. So you see, it's wise to keep on hand a really good supply of that brisk-flavored Lipton tea.
Oh, sure, it'll come in handy to warm up the chills you get from these Inner Sanctum stories. And, brother, you're going to shiver plenty with Barry Kroger as Sebastian Packer as this story goes on about the Judas clock.
I hadn't touched those horrible coins of Judas Iscariot since the day the storekeeper was killed. By now, I half believed the legend that death followed them. I began to feel that the only way I could escape their curse was to find the Judas clock and put the coins back in its weights where they belonged. One day, as I read the notices in the Times, my heart skipped a beat. It said, auction of clocks at Chopin Place, auction room, Saturday at 7. Rare items, one of them fine Italian Renaissance piece of black marble. Rare treat for collectors. Come early.
Interested in something, young man?
Oh, why, yes, well, that is nothing in particular. Just looking at these splendid pieces, I thought I might stay for the auction.
I look about. Auction won't start for a bit yet.
I sauntered toward the black clock. My hand had scooped all the coins from my pocket. I would have to work fast and noiselessly. My sweating fingers began to unscrew the small cover on one of the weights. I would soon have the coins put back.
Just as I thought. What have you got in your hand there? Let's have a look.
No, nothing. Nothing at all. I was just examining.
Examining my foot? You've got a flock of coins there. You must have taken them from somewhere in the clock.
No.
Here.
No.
Give them to me.
Sometimes when things happen quickly, the mind retains details that would otherwise escape notice. As the man and I struggled, I dropped the clock's weight. It hit a short, round bit of metal directly below it. The man had a vice-like grip on my clenched hand.
Blasted little wretch.
No.
I'll wrench your hand off for you.
I heard a whirring sound within the clock, and before my horrified eyes, the supporting panel at the front of the clock's base slowly lifted on hinges. The clock was off balance and began to fall forward. I screamed a warning. Look out! The auction man was dead, mashed to a pulp of bone and blood beneath the clock. As my father had been. I ran to the door and out into the street. I was right back where I'd started. Only now I knew that my father had been murdered by Cousin Andy. I walked for miles, trying to pull myself together. I wandered aimlessly, or so I thought. But fate had traced my path before me, because I was startled to find myself staring into the shop window of a rare coin dealer named Megaroid. I walked into the shop. Mr. Megaroid was a nice little man. He smiled a bit quizzically at my firm belief that I possessed the betrayal coins of Judas. I poured them onto his counter.
Oh, I say, you could be right, you know. Oh, these are the right era. I say, suppose they are. Let me put a glass to them.
Mr. McElroy, would they be worth a great deal, even if they weren't the...
Well, let me see. Yes, gracious, yes, they should be worth a great deal as collector's items alone.
Well, Mr. McElroy, I feel that there's something I should tell you about these pieces. They...
Yes?
Oh, it's not important.
Oh, well, now, just a moment. I have a catalogue on this here in my show window. I'll fetch it, just a jiffy.
The coins lay on the counter. I watched Mr. Megaroid run down the aisle. As he approached the display window, his foot caught in an electric wire which lay across the floor. The lights went out and I saw him pitch forward and... Ah! Mr. Megaroid! Mr. Megaroid! The street light peered through the broken plate glass and played across a grotesquely sprawled form in the show window. I needed no more light than there was to see what had happened. The upper half of the heavy plate had broken and dropped flat against the solid lower half. There was no need to ask how he was. No guillotine could have done the neater job. Mr. Megaroid had no head.
Who else but death can own the coins of Judas?
Tonight, I shall find out if Mr. Arnold is Cousin Andrew. If he is, I shall feel no remorse in killing him tonight. Because while working to repair the Judas clock last night, I discovered how my father's accidental death had been well-conceived, diabolic murder. When the right-hand weight reached the floor of the clock on the 12th stroke of midnight, it tripped a trigger which collapsed the base of the clock and caused it to fall forward. My father had died on the 12th stroke of midnight.
Have you finished, Mr. Packer?
No, Mrs. Arnold. I shall have to come back tomorrow night. What time do you expect Mr. Arnold tomorrow?
About 11, I'd say. Will you be finished by then?
Well, I think so. I'll have to take these weights to the shop with me, though. Something has to be added to them.
Why, of course, Mr. Packer. Mr. Arnold will be so surprised to see the clock running, won't he?
He'll be very surprised, Mrs. Arnold. I've put the coins in their place within the weights. Not 15 in each weight, but 15 in one and 10 in the other. The other 5 coins are in my pocket. In another pocket, I have a small 38, although I don't plan to use it. 8 o'clock, and I have a 30-year-old date to keep.
Good evening.
Oh,
Mr. Packer?
Yes, but I'm closing now.
I see you are. My name is Arnold. Just came in from Chicago. Sorry to spoil your little surprise. Or my wife's, rather.
You surprised her instead?
Yes. She had to confess. I wanted to go out, so she had to tell me about engaging you to repair the Judas clock.
You don't want it repaired?
By all means, I insist. It's a splendid idea. But what I came for, really, was to tell you that you and I have much to talk about.
Oh, do we?
Yes. But look, close your place and bring along whatever you need to fix the clock, and we'll talk about it at my place.
I'm all set. Let's go.
Think you'll have it fixed in time to strike midnight?
Oh, yes. Yes, it will strike at midnight. Yes. Well, there we are, Mr. Arnold. Weights are in place. Let's see. It's exactly 10 minutes before midnight. Set the hands. And just a little shove on the pendulum. So. And the Judas clock ticks again.
It's an evil clock, son. Evil as Satan himself.
The Judas clock wakes from a 30-year sleep. Hey, Cousin Sebastian.
Cousin? What?
That's what I wanted to tell you. My wife told me your father owned this clock in London.
Oh, yes.
I was your father's cousin. You're Sebastian Packer, the little boy who ran away that night.
Cousin Henry.
Yes. I wonder how much you know of that horrible night when your father was killed.
Well, I know the clock fell on father. I heard the sound from my room, and I was so frightened. I ran down the rear steps in time to see them carry father away. He was all covered up.
So that was why I didn't find you in your room afterward. It happened so fast. We were sitting, talking. The clocks were striking 12. Suddenly, the base of the clock seemed to cave in, and...
I know.
I bought the clock at an auction a few years later. Had it all fixed. It's good and solid now. I saw to that.
Yes, sir. Well, I suppose I'll run along now, Cousin Andy.
Nonsense. Let's make up for lost time and get acquainted.
Well...
Come now, I have some fine old port from England here.
Ever?
Sit down a while. No, not that chair.
No?
This one's a lot more comfortable.
It's a funny thing. When you work with clocks, as long as I have, you get to philosophizing about time.
That's so. How?
Well, here I sit by the big clock, just as my father sat 30 years ago. You know how many seconds ago that was, Cousin Andy?
No. Do you?
Well, 315,360,000 seconds in 10 years. That'd be 9,460,800,000 seconds in 30 years.
You've got quite a mechanical mind, Sebastian. Here, try this port.
Thank you. Here's to Father. What's the matter, Cousin Andy? Are you ill?
No.
Your face is quite drawn, gray.
Shut up.
Well, Cousin Andy, it's late. I guess I'd best go. You know, you do look awfully sick. Oh, don't get up, old man.
Here,
sit down and relax. Take my chair. It's the more comfortable. Why, you're shaking like a leaf. Now, just sit quietly. I'll see myself out.
Thundering cinders, I...
Good night, Cousin Andy.
Oh, Sebastian. Sebastian. Get it off. Sebastian, in heaven's name.
Poor Cousin Andy. You're choking to death. You die hard, too, don't you? It was just a matter of timing. I set the hand a minute fast, and the weight didn't touch your clever little spring device till just now, because it's lighter by 5 pieces of cursed Judas money. Rest easy, Father. And he cast down the pieces of silver in the temple and departed and went and hanged himself.
But a fine chime was had by all. Anybody want to buy a large grandfather clock? I'm in the market for a sundial myself.
A sundial? My, they are old-timey.
Mm.
Say, Mr. Raymond, if you're afraid of clocks that tick, why don't you try to get hold of one of those old Egyptian water clocks?
Oh, Mary, now you're going to tell me that when tea time comes around, the water begins to boil in the clock?
Well, that would be quite an invention.
Mm.
But no, Mr. Raymond, right now I'm not going to talk about Lipton tea. Instead, I'm going to tell our listeners about an important job that lies ahead. A fight that's far from finished. Yes, the battle for Japan. Our government says that this Pacific war will be one of the most bitter and difficult in history. Never before has a nation fought so far away from its own shores. And to support this fight, we at home must work even harder at our home front activities. We must keep on buying more and more bombs, and we must hold on to them. And above all, we must stay on our war job until the job in the Pacific is over.
Well, I'll leave you with a cheerful, timely moral. Oh, that goes with tonight's story. No extra charge. Now, you can figure out how many seconds you've lived. All right, that's your pastime. But you can't figure out how many you've got left. That's just sometime. You know what I mean? Well, I'll see you in just 604,800 seconds from right now. Hmm? Well, that's next Tuesday night at 9 o'clock, of course. By the way, this month's Inner Sanctum Mystery novel is The Lucky Stiff by Craig Rice. Well, now it's really time to close that there squeaking door until next Tuesday night when Lipton Tea and Lipton Soup bring you another Inner Sanctum Mystery directed by Hyman Brown. So until then, good night. Pleasant dream.
Folks, if you'd like to give the boys overseas a real taste of home, then why not include a package or two of Lipton's noodle soup mix the next time you send them a box of food? Yes, Lipton's has the same homemade, chickeny taste as the soup you make right in your own kitchen. That's why it's a thoughtful, welcome little gift to send Lipton's. And as you know yourself, Lipton's noodle soup makes a grand snack. So remember, send a package or two to your boy. And remember to tune in next Tuesday night for another Inner Sanctum Mystery.
This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
That was The Judas Clock from Inner Sanctum Mystery here on the Mysterious Old Radio Listening Society podcast. Once again, I'm Eric.
I'm Tim.
And I'm Joshua.
Joshua, that's your pick, right, this week?
Yes. Yes.
I will say that, hands down, on a vote right now, the best Lipton Tea Lady Mr. Host exchanges ever.
Yeah.
I know we're going to get into the story.
No, it's one of the reasons I picked it. I think they are on fire.
They are in fuego in this.
The puns I usually sort of enjoy a little ironically, but many are cold, few are frozen. That's gold.
And just the diabolicalness of the episode is the Judas clock with a murder clock that runs on like biblical mean coins from
right.
Judas Iscariot, and opens with a pun on the words of Christ. I'm like, bold choice, Mr. Host.
I need to turn to our, in this round table, our biblical scholar. Are the Judas coins a thing before this episode, or were the Judas coins made up for this episode of this show?
They are the 30 pieces of silver that Judas received for betraying.
Aha! I didn't know he got paid for that.
You just thought he did it.
Yeah, I did.
A freebie?
Do this on spec?
Yeah.
I don't know. I didn't read it.
Now, look, if it goes well, you can betray bigger and better people, and we'll actually pay you.
I guess he would have to have some kind of motivation. I just thought maybe that the government threatened his family or maybe something.
Like,
I don't know.
Housewives of...
Like a reality TV show, just jerk face.
Throw wine in his face.
We could go into much deeper theological arguments here, but it is part of the biblical narrative, yes.
Thank you. So the coins are a thing. Now, here's a question.
The idea of the coins as some sort of relic, that's not so much history.
So is it like the Holy Grail, like we think it exists, but no one's found it, the coins?
I don't know, like classically Judas coins are part of stories.
We don't actually have them. Because that would be crazy.
No, I just think this gave this flimsy little murder fest a little bit of gravitas. Right?
So it is a thing. The coins are a thing that is known. Great. Do the Judas coins appear in... I just got to
so
know.
So many Judas coins.
Yeah, I got to know. Do they appear in other literature or storytelling that you know of?
Judas is used as a metaphor, an image, and these coins are often part of that.
Okay.
But I don't remember. I'm sure there is another example. I don't remember it being used as this artifact in anything that comes to mind immediately.
Because it's an interesting thing that you could, you know, not know you have them and put them into a soda machine and, you know, it comes alive or something. You know what I mean? Like...
Betrayed by soda.
Right.
Oh, I think we all have been.
He's mad at these cans.
your audition for Mr. Host is not going well.
No, it's not. Anyway, so I just got that out of my system just so I know what's going on. Now, the clock itself, that was invented for this story. Or is there also a Judas clock
I'm pretty sure this was invented. This screams Inner Sanctum.
Thank you.
Some guy invented the most impractical murder weapon.
It really is.
500-pound marble murder clock.
Like noon and midnight every day for hundreds of years. Like, the thing fell over again. I got to...
Right?
Who put the Judas coins in again?
Doesn't work without them.
Then why have it? Oh, every morning get up and pick that damn thing up and then, you know, get a new cat. So, interestingly... All of that poking fun at the obvious weird holes in this plot, impractical murder device, all things we just said. I'm going to need you guys to help me figure this out, but I really liked this.
I thought you were going to ask us to help you figure out the plot. You
no, well, to help, this one I could understand.
Help you understand yourself.
Well, then,
therapists get paid a lot.
I shouldn't like this, but I
listened to this before. Somewhere in the history of this podcast, and for the life of me, I can't think of why I didn't bring this.
I'll tell you why I have spent many years not bringing this is because I conflated it with Hickory Dickory Doom.
Oh, from CBS Radio Mystery Theater.
And I was convinced for several years that we had already talked about it on the podcast, but I was confusing it with another Hyman Brown murder clock.
Right.
Because coming back to it now that you brought it, this was just joy. I was just giddy with delight, beginning to end. Every plot hole that you mentioned, Ken mentioned, like that's a feature, not a bug, as far as I'm concerned.
Right, right. There's a pace.
Yeah, don't stop to make sense.
Yeah,
there's a pace to it that is suspenseful and sinister. That I always felt because of how it was performed and written, on edge.
Yeah, and it also really foreshadows the slasher film vibe, where it's just this series of escalating,
really
gruesome deaths.
Right.
I'm wondering if they got complaints.
Not from me.
But in 1945, this kid, 14-year-old, young man, listening to, as the listeners are, his father slowly be crushed to death by a marble clock.
Right.
Gurgling, and he wipes the frothy blood from his dad's lips and then closes his eyes, and it's like, ugh.
Yeah.
And that's just the beginning.
Yeah.
The weird ape-like owner of the curio shop gets an axe dropped on his head.
Dude gets beheaded.
Yes. Then they take a break, and the Lipton tea lady understates the whole thing with, gosh, that's a mean clock.
Let's fight Japan. Oh, jeez.
I know someone who needs a murder clock.
Let's send a bunch of these murder clocks to Japan.
I love the structure of you meet this guy and you go with him for a little bit. And from your understanding of his perspective, this is all just, what is this? This seems so strange. And then you get his backstory and you understand what he's seeing through his eyes. And it's just so much worse.
To your point about don't stop to make sense, it hooks you right away with the setup. It's this guy. We don't know the backstory, but he says, like, I've been searching for this clock and this man who killed me. You're like, oh, this is a great premise for overwrought emotions and gratuitous violence. And I know Inner Sanctum can really deliver this. So I am on board.
The resolution of this is also of the story somewhat non-existent. Agree, disagree?
I feel like they very neatly, with a tiny little button, buttoned it up. I feel like they're saying their narrator finished his work and went off and hanged himself.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. Again, because that is what Judas did.
And they quote that at the very end.
Yeah, so you really got to know your Bible to get into this one.
They gave it a quote, but it helps if you know the reference.
All right.
I would argue you just have to have basic cultural literacy, but
sit by the clock, Joshua.
I know Judas was. I just know he got paid.
Wait, would you kill one of us if he didn't get paid?
I don't know.
Because we're kind of Jesus-y.
Stay on your toes.
I really enjoyed Kroger's over-the-top performance. I mean, which you have to do to sell these scripts, like right at the top when he recognizes what the housewife has brought to him, the newlywed, when he just is like, Judas, and the clock. He sounds like a snake with a hairball. It's just this like,
yep.
And it's just so, I think, delightfully scaled up to match the tone of Inner Sanctum. Because if you tried to do this with any naturalism, it would be boring.
Get it? Scaled up. He's a snake.
It's still really bombing this audition.
Have you considered selling tea?
Yeah. Nope.
And if they don't have a Judas clock, just ask for the works. These are some quality dad jokes.
There are.
That's a sandwich with everything.
And then Mary has a good one that he has the best reaction to. She goes, she says, well, it wasn't a very good joke, you know. And he says, no.
Yeah, he's very peevish. He's like, that's true.
That's true. That's what I was.
And it's just great. He drops the voice. Right? It's just Paul McGrath going, this is bullshit.
Well, my joke wasn't very good. That's true. Yeah. That made me laugh really hard.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if that was supposed to be in there. I like the story, but I keep going back. I really do think I enjoyed the commercials more with the little tea lady.
Well, I think that's the genius of Inner Sanctum is that they
what a great way to sell a product.
But the commercials affect how you are consuming the story. They put you in the right mood.
Drop. Yes. Yeah,
and while it's totally different, murder after murder after murder, and then it's like, ha, 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 puns. But for some reason, they really inform one another.
Yeah, it's interesting how commercials still to this day are hold that thought, complete shift. Mm-hmm. Now back to what you were thinking. No matter what medium we're talking about, almost all commercials are hold and shift.
Mm-hmm.
You're exactly right that you don't feel like you're shifting or holding.
Yeah.
To listen to them sell you tea.
Yeah, it's like a different course in a meal.
Right. It's a great way to put it.
Also, to my earlier question of whether or not they got complaints, I think part of the reasons they may not have received complaints are these commercials, because they tell you to not take gory violence seriously.
Right.
They're like, have a sense of humor. It's just a guy getting an axe through the head. Lighten up.
Right.
The child watching his father die and his broken back.
But then also they have Barry Kroger's like doing the high-pitched falsetto 14-year-old voice, which is pretty funny.
I got confused, actually. It was second listen that, because he was talking and he's narrating and then he's talking like this. And I went, all right, he was younger.
He's 14.
Yeah,
he's
yeah.
Very late for puberty to not kick in.
When it's time to change.
Some of the names in here, Pettibone, but Megaroid.
He turned into a pickup truck.
Yes, I was just like, he fought Godzilla on Monster Island. I think there's some soothing swabs for that. Megaroid.
Right.
That sounds uncomfortable.
I enjoyed the free-flowing vibe between this isn't supernatural, this is a just devilishly constructed mechanical clock, and also there's a curse. Our narrator's like, he's not going to suffer the consequences till it's time. Like everyone else, if they touch the coins, they're goners, but he can have them.
Which made me feel in the storyline like the clock was on his side. For a while, I thought, oh, this clock is protecting him.
But do the coins know that when this mission is complete, doesn't need to kill him because he's going to kill himself?
Yeah.
Because he still dies at the end. But because he's voluntarily doing it, the coins don't take him out.
Coins don't know that. Coins are stupid.
Wow. That's hurtful.
We just lost all our Patreon coin. People.
The quarters are dropping right now.
because the script goes out of its way to have the scene where he discovers that it's a purely mechanical contraption.
Yeah.
There's no supernatural wrath that causes it to tip over. But then immediately after that scene, I was like, but what about the Scotland Yard guy who just touched it and had a heart attack? Was that a coincidence? And then the next scene, he takes it into Megaroid. And Megaroid, upon touching these coins, gets decapitated by the shop window. And so you realize, oh, it's the coins that are cursed.
Yeah, and the clock is mechanical.
Yeah. I mean, why that is?
Yeah, again, lots of holes in this plot. Yet I'm not mad, and I should be. Or mad isn't the right word, but I should be like, eh, lazy writing, right? But instead, I'm like, I enjoy it, and that's why I'm confused. There's lazy writing in here that if you listen to this podcast, you know I do not give a lot of grace to.
It's an exchange of like, you can have this much fun if you ignore these things.
Right. Yeah.
And I would say the only thing you really have to ignore is why this clock was ever constructed this way. But to Tim's point, it's like in exchange for that, you get this just fun, over-the-top, overwrought, but perfectly overwrought.
It's familial with the temples and crypts and things that Indiana Jones goes into. Like, this is ridiculous. This is elaborate and stupid to actually execute.
Here's my question. Why then a clock? Couldn't it just be the Judas coins themselves? Why does there need to be a clock?
Clearly, though, I'm going to think about this too hard, but the prince had to have this clock constructed as a murder weapon. And then he decided to use the Judas coins, their just literal physical weight.
Mm-hmm. So it was, what do we got hanging around here? We need some weight in this thing for this thing. Grab those Judas coins I get that I own.
Yeah.
And it's also like the coins are easy to steal. The clock, that's never going to show up in court. That's 500 pounds of marble. We have to let them go. The evidence is too heavy.
Bag it. Oh, man. And I really enjoyed the precision of Barry's character, I forget the main character's name, of how he tells his cousin how many seconds it's been since father was murdered. And it shows how he has carefully calculated this moment with the number of coins that he puts in the weights to know exactly when it's going to fall over. And it's just, again, a nice bit of melodrama.
Yeah.
Now, like, again, this is dark and horrible. If this were naturalistic, it would be grueling to sit through, right? But it's just an aesthetic piece. You're just like, this was fun.
Yeah, as you
say, none of these people are real.
In the opening, the Grand Guignol of ha ha ha, ee, ha ha ha, ee.
Yes. Which is now my ringtone for you. Just going to clip that out.
Oh, please
and
make
I'll know
that
to
happen.
Ignore the phone whenever I hear that.
One of the thoughts, gentlemen.
It was sad, but a fine chime was had by.
There's so many really fun puns. Best ever. That's my vote. Best ever Lipton Tea Lady, Mr. Host show ever. The show itself, I would say, was a lot of fun. And really, I enjoyed it. Even to the point of stand this time, is it a classic of old time radio or Inner Sanctum? No, but I think it's really good all the way around.
I know this is more my wheelhouse, so it probably might be surprising that this is one of my favorite radio episodes ever.
Oh, nice!
I would say classic, super awesome classic for me personally, super duper awesome classic, cool, good.
Yeah, it's got an EC comic kind of feel to it, doesn't it?
Oh, Inner Sanctum really does.
Yeah.
And I'm so glad you brought it, because apparently I listened to this sometime in the past, went, nah, and I don't know why, and I'm kind of mad at that guy.
Past Tim.
What a jerk.
Yeah, I mean, this is just a mostly plotless murder pun fest. Classic. just the performances are all of the same scenery chewing level. This is a chef's kiss for Mr. Host and Mary, and just fun all around.
I just wrote down that you are both getting a tiny bag of 30 pieces of silver for Christmas.
Great. Thanks. Now I have to hang myself.
I have to learn how to make a clock.
You're going to get a little ornament of me hanging.
Yeah. Can you That's come horrifying, by and yet...
Pick up 500 pounds of marble for me.
Oh, and the next Inner Sanctum mystery novel is called Lucky Stiff. As if this couldn't get better.
Oh, that is such a wrath boner.
I know. I was really hoping Mary was still in the studio when he said that.
The hell it is!
In your dreams, Mr. Host.
Tim, tell him stuff.
Please go visit ghoulishdelights.com, home of this podcast. You'll find other episodes there. You can find, of course, anywhere you search for podcasts, you'll find us. But if you go to ghoulishdelights.com, you can leave comments.
Like the garbage? Like dumpster diving for podcasts would be found there?
An app that exists?
The Yellow Pages?
If you're going to the Yellow Pages for your podcasts, we're not finding us is not the only problem. Anywho... you can leave comments. You can vote in polls. You can, in fact, search through our archives based upon different series. So if you want, like, what all episodes of Inner Sanctum have they done? You can find out. I could tell you right now, but I'm not going to. You'll also find a link to our spread shop to get some swag, and you'll find a link to our Patreon page.
Yes, go to patreon.com/themorals and become a supporter of this podcast. Do you feel like you're just not really contributing in life, that you just go through day after day without really doing anything meaningful? Well, you can find that meaning through giving us money. Go to patreon.com/themorals and support this podcast today.
Wow. You just...
Too much Inner Sanctum. A little too dark?
No, it's beautifully dark. The Mysterious Old Radio Listening Society Theater Company does live on-stage radio drama, recreations of classic old-time radio, plus a lot of our own original work. Come see us perform. You can do that by going to ghoulishdelights.com, and there you will see where we're performing, what we're performing, and how to get tickets. We'd love to see you, but if you can't make it, because, you know, it's primarily in Minnesota, in the United States, just in case, you know, they're in, like, you, I don't know, like Australia right now, and they never heard of Minnesota.
Yeah.
You never know.
They have airplanes in Australia.
Yeah, I know. Just getting here is hard. That's like a 90-hour flight. Anyway, if you're a Patreon, we record the episodes, the audio of all of our live performances, and that is another perk. What are we doing next?
Next, we kick off a thrilling 7-part discussion of the 15-part serial Bury Your Dead Arizona from I Love a Mystery. Until then...
Look out!
Ha ha ha, ee, ha ha ha, ee.